Thank you for listening to this podcast from KX93.5. We invite you to listen to more music and talk on our grassroots nonprofit radio station in Laguna Beach from anywhere in the world on kx93.5.com/listen or on our smartphone apps. Right now, here's the Importance of Being podcast on KX93.5. Okay, this is KX93.5. I'm Ernest Hackman, and this is the Importance of Being show. We'll get the show started in just a bit.
I know you have a little life in you.
KFK. This is KX93.5. You're listening to The Importance of Being Show. I'm your host, Ernest Hackman. We do this show live every Sunday morning from 9 to 10. And today I am happy to have as my guest, our police chief.
Laura Farinella.
It happens mostly when you know the person and you know their name. Yes, Laura. Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Good, welcome. Okay, so you're our police chief here in Laguna Beach.
Yes.
And, how did that happen? That's a long question. What made you want to be a police officer to begin with?
To be quite honest, it really wasn't something I thought about all my life because my dad's a doctor. I have another brother, a doctor, and another brother who's a dentist. So that was kind of the medical path. That
okay.
was kind of
that's yeah. That's, everybody was lean in that way.
Correct. And I went to college at Chapman University, and my major was mass media, film, and television production.
Oh, and that so is a departure.
It was, and so but I did after college work for CBS TV and on a couple of movies, and I didn't like it, you know, even
really?
Though I went to college for that, I didn't like it. I didn't like the a lot of backstabbing. There wasn't a lot of teamwork. The work was inconsistent. You get hired for pre-production, then not production, but then again for post-production. So the inconsistency, as well as I was living in Orange and driving up to Sunset and Gower every day.
Oh, there you go. So you're really seeing the people.
Correct. And so that was tough, and I still liked living in Orange County, but the work was in L.A.
So did you grow up in Orange County?
No, I grew up in L.A. I grew up in the San Fernando Valley in Granada Hills.
Oh, really? I went to Northridge, so yeah, I'm quite familiar.
Yeah, my two colleges I applied to were Cal State Northridge and Chapman.
Oh, and so, then you chose Chapman to get...
It was smaller. I went to a small high school, so it just was a better fit.
Okay. And so what then brought you into police work? How did that happen?
So I, once again, was laid off after production, and
right.
I really just didn't know what I wanted to do, and I was working at Vaughn's in the meat department as a meat cutter, and just because it was, you know, consistent work, and it gave me, you know, a paycheck.
Right.
And then a really good friend of mine from high school became an LAPD cop.
Okay.
And so we had lunch one day, and she was telling me what a great job it is, how you help the community, how you get into a police car and
can you get a little closer to the
sure.
mic?
Yeah. How you get into a police car and drive around, and, you know, the day is yours, you
right.
know, to make good in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounded exciting to me and different. And you had to use your head as far as decision-making, critical decisions, all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah.
And so that sounded interesting and fun to me. And at the time, I was living with some roommates in Long Beach, and Long Beach Police Department was hiring. So I said, well, with my friend, let's try it. And so we went down to civil service, picked up you had to have a booklet that you studied,
right.
and I went and took the test, and
lo and behold.
And 6 months later, I got hired and started the police academy and never looked back.
And so what was it like being were you a beat cop at some point where you were out, you know, patrolling and doing that kind of stuff?
Yeah, for the first 5 years, I was a beat cop, and it was fun. It was great. I mean, you got into a police car with a partner, usually not sometimes you worked alone, but mostly with a partner. And you went out and just, it was during the crack epidemic.
Oh, so action and adventure.
Yeah, a lot going on, a lot of homicides, a lot of violent crime going on at Long Beach at the time. And so it was exciting and different every day. And you learned a heck of a lot as a street cop in Long Beach at that time in the late 80s, early 90s.
And so late 80s, early 90s, there weren't a huge amount of women on the force. What was it like? Were you the only one, or what were the numbers like?
Really low. The numbers were very low. And so I would go into briefing, and a lot of times I'd be the only female sitting in briefing.
Okay.
And a lot of that has changed, but most police chiefs and police agencies across the nation recognize that to have a blended force makes us better as a
sure.
as a police force.
Sure.
So they always strive to try to, as long as the candidates are qualified and have good backgrounds,
mm-hmm.
to have at least 20% women if possible. But when I went through the LA Sheriff's Academy,
okay.
there were a good contingency of women. I'm not going to say there weren't, but we were all from very different agencies.
Okay.
From my agency, Long Beach, there were 15 of us and only two of us were women. So that
puts you
kind of right at about that point. So, I didn't really, it didn't bother me. I didn't bother me at all. But I think what a lot of men don't recognize, what if that scenario was changed for you, where you came to work every day and you were the minority,
right,
and all the clothing was for women, not for men.
Right.
And at every rank and at every job opportunity was a woman in that position, not a man.
Right.
And how would how would they feel in the workplace?
Sure.
You know, you know, going for a job, you kind of felt sometimes that, well, they have one female in there, or if I got it or a female got it, well, they just did it because they need a female in that position. You know, they
yes,
minimize or undermine that
sure,
person's.
Sure, sure. Yeah, it's like this is some kind of diversity effort or something like that.
Correct.
Purely just a check the box type of thing.
Correct, instead of they got it on their merits.
And I guess another part of that was that, you know, women will tend to approach a problem differently than a man.
That's correct.
Their natural response might be different. And it's not necessarily bad, right, or substandard, where I think, you know, back in the day of Clint Eastwood and they had Tyne Daly and he's like, you know.
Yeah. No, you're right. And it's you know, you're right. Women do approach things differently mostly. And then what you got, and not all the time, but mostly.
Mm-hmm.
But also you have to realize your customer base is the community, which is 50% women. So when you respond to a call, you have to realize it's probably the worst day of their life.
Okay.
They, you know, they don't call 911 when they're having a good day. So when you get there, some people, how they respond differently to men and women, it's a benefit to law enforcement to have a woman there. So if they identify more or have a better relationship maybe with the female
sure,
side of things,
sure,
whether it's a man or woman or not that you're talking to, that's to the benefit of everyone. And as female officers, we learn from our male counterparts and vice versa. So I think we are so much better if we're a diversified police force, not just with gender, but everything.
Okay.
And I've always said when we're sitting around the table, or I'm sitting around the table with my team, if I look at all white people from Orange County, how are we ever going to grow as an organization? We need to have different backgrounds and diversities and ethnicities, so we all have a different experiences.
So there's more opinions and more different types of opinions in the
how
discussion.
How we see it. Looking through different lenses, yes. And the way I see it isn't always the right way. And so have someone say, you know, I don't see
you
it
mean
that
me.
Way.
The way I see it is always right.
That's we all like to think that, right?
Yes, we do. And so you worked in patrol for a few years or five years.
5 years, yes.
And then what told you or what made you want to go up the ranks?
Well, the next job after that was they asked me to come to the police academy to be a recruit training officer. So like a DI staff, like mm-hmm. you have in the military.
Yep.
So they recognize that you need at least have one woman on that test staff because there are women in the police academy.
Oh, yes, and yes. So, at this point now, there's starting to be some.
Right.
We hope this would blow over.
That sounded like a great thing to me. You know, you got to work out and run. You got to basically empower, you know, the future of the organization. And I like teaching. I like to teach, and so you got to teach. So I did that for a year for two academy classes, which was awesome to do that.
So at this point, your family, they're all doctors and dentists.
Yes.
and
educators.
Yes. And so you've taken this job that's, you know, kind of blue collar.
Absolutely. Very different. No one else in my family has ever even thought about doing that, nor do we really have any family friends but one that was an LAPD cop. So there was really no nexus or contact with someone that would share that experience with
them. So now how did they feel about that, your decision? Were they?
My family's very supportive. They supported me, but obviously worried, you know, like, how's this going to play out? And
yeah, especially, I guess, at that time in Long Beach and with what was going on.
Right. Yeah, so it was dangerous, but they were very supportive, absolutely very supportive in all of that, and they were supportive always, you know, but yeah, it was very different. It was an offshoot. It was even different for me because I'd never experienced it. I will tell you, my first day in patrol, being in the ghettos of an African-American community in Long Beach was
yep.
not the way I grew up.
Yeah, and well, Long Beach has a bit of everything. It's like
yes.
a miniature L.A.,
it is. Oh, it's a mini South Central in some areas.
Well, no, but I mean you know, because L.A. has different areas that have
very diverse,
completely different constituencies.
Right. And, you know, you have to look at them, too. I mean, I walk up to my first call and I have a buffed out African-American parolee with cornrows in a domestic violence situation with his wife or girlfriend. I don't know where, it doesn't really matter. And
right.
And two little kids there, and they see this little teeny white chick walk up. I mean,
right.
I look at it from their perspective.
Weren't you too, afraid?
No, you know what? I wasn't. Looking back at it, hindsight is like, like they probably thought, you don't even have a clue at how to handle our scenario. You didn't come from where we come from. You know
right.
what I mean? That kind
right.
of thing. And that's
right.
where the diversity piece comes in, and where you have to have people with different backgrounds. But I still have to have the authority and ability to come in and handle that scenario regardless of who I'm dealing with. But it was a reality check for me. It was like, this is not how I grew up.
So
you
what
know?
Did you do?
I handled that, it. I pulled the woman off to the side. My partner went to the mail, and he went to jail for beating her up. And in the end, it's about compassion and caring about people.
Okay.
But my paradigm shifted that night. I am very lucky.
This isn't the valley.
No. I grew up in a completely different, yes, I'm very lucky. It made you completely appreciate where you came from and having a roof over your head and a great education and a family that cares about you.
In a safe neighborhood.
In a safe neighborhood, yes. So, you know, but then you just have to have compassion and you have to care. And it doesn't really matter who you're dealing with. Your goal is to get them into safety and to hopefully make sure it doesn't happen again, which isn't always the scenario.
Well, yeah. And I guess you can't solve that with the tools that you have. You can intervene in the acute situation, but
that's correct.
You know,
just something to think about. When I came on and patrolled domestic violence, if we got to a call of domestic violence and there was no marks or scrapes on the woman.
Yeah, that's not a thing.
We took a little face page report and walked away.
Right. Man's home and his castle, right?
So, you know, you think about laws laws weren't even there. All law enforcement didn't even have the skill set and tools to protect the woman unless he beat her up so badly there was a mark.
Oh,
or she wanted him to go to jail. You come full forward now, it doesn't matter if there's a mark or scratch. The minute we know there's been some sort of physical encounter between the two.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it doesn't matter if it's two men. I mean, two men, two women,
right,
or men
right,
or women.
Right, right,
so that's
right,
changed.
Right, right, yeah.
And it doesn't matter if the victim wants to file a report. We still take that person to jail because
right.
we know there's the cycle of violence now.
Sure, yes.
And they don't have the ability to want to protect themselves because they're in that
cycle
of violence.
Well, and it could
violence.
Be coercive at any rate.
Exactly. So, you know, we've in law enforcement in life, we evolve as a society, and we've come from not valuing a woman,
in
a relationship.
In many ways, yes.
To coming to, we value you so much, and we know this cycle of violence is so horrible that we are going to take the aggressor to jail, no matter who it is, no matter what you want us to do, because it's the right thing to do for you, whether you recognize it or not.
Right, yes. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. This is the Importance of Being show. My guest today is Laura Farinella from the Laguna Beach Police Department, and she is our chief. This is KX93.5. We'll be right back.
Cause I'm in this house, I'm in this hole, oh my time.
Okay, this is KX93.5, and this is the Importance of Being show. I'm your host, Ernest Hackman, and I am delighted to have as my guest this morning, Laura Farinella of the Laguna Beach, I keep wanting to say county because I worked with the water district, Laguna Beach Police Department, and she is the chief. So when we left off, you were talking about your days as a patrol officer in the city of Long Beach during the crack epidemic.
Rodney King,
a girl from the valley, where her parents and her family are all worried about her because she's in a pretty rough area, or some area parts of Long Beach are quite gritty, if you will. So you did that patrol for about 5 years. Then what did you do? Oh no, I think you said you went to be a drill instructor or a work at the academy.
Yeah, so 5 years in, I was kind of tapped to go work at the police academy, which I did, and I worked there for about a year, which is two academy classes back-to-back, because they were doing a massive hiring at the time.
Okay.
And then while I was there, I promoted to corporal, and as a corporal, anytime you promote, basically you go back to patrol.
Okay.
So I went back to patrol operations, and I worked there for a couple years, and then I promoted to sergeant.
Okay.
And I had about eight or nine years on as a, when I became a sergeant and went again back to patrol and worked patrol for a couple years. And part of what I love about law enforcement is there are so many different things you can do. So the minute you might get bored with the day-to-day
sure.
or you feel like you've mastered whatever you're doing, you can move on if they pick you.
Right.
So knowing how I wanted to develop my career, I then went to internal affairs. And so I went to internal affairs for 2 years, which is very interesting. For a police department that had about 800 cops and about 600 civilian personnel, you're looking at a lot of internal affairs cases that come through. So they would come through via complaints by the community or internal complaints through the administration, and you had to investigate your own.
Right.
And it's not an easy thing to do, but it's a sure learning process.
And so when you come in the lunchroom as an internal affairs officer, does everybody rush to sit at your table?
No. And we actually, our offices were off-site because of that alone, to actually give the officer anonymity, because just because there's a complaint lodged against you doesn't mean you're guilty of anything, that you've done anything wrong. So I worked there for 2 years, and I learned a lot. I had to fire cops. I had to take guns away from them. I exonerated a lot of cops who did the right thing but were unjustly, you know, accused of doing something wrong. So the breadth of all of that. And then after that, I was promoted to lieutenant.
Wow.
And then went back to patrol again.
Bravo.
Went back to patrol again.
Back to patrol.
And worked patrol operations. And at the when I was a lieutenant, I got pregnant with my son.
Oh.
So what was good about that is we were building a police substation. And while I was pregnant, they allowed me to be kind of the liaison between public works and the builders and the police department while they were building that station. So I got to build some really great relationships and learn a lot about building a police facility.
Wow.
So kind of every step along the way, it's kind of funny. It's setting the stage for being a police chief, because to be a police chief, you have to know about all these things. You have to know about internal affairs, about hiring, recruiting, and training, about police facilities and working with public works and vendors and all of that kind of stuff.
Well, sure, and I guess if you don't have direct experience with that, it's kind of a hole, and you're kind of depending on other people to fill in that blank for you. And
it correct.
Just slows down the process, I would suspect. So this happened over how many year period from, say, field officer to lieutenant?
Let's see. I would say about 12 years.
Okay.
About 12 years.
So, and I think you said you started in the 80s.
89.
Okay. So, and you mentioned, you know, there was Rodney King.
Yes.
And so things happened during the course of that that changed kind of our culture, our society a little bit. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, how those things reverberated inside the police department and what the response was and how things kind of shifted?
Yeah, it was, you know, I was so young when Rodney King happened, but I was working patrol when that happened. We brought the National Guard into the city. Literally, we would drive down Long Beach Boulevard and the whole boulevard was on fire. It was like out of a movie, and I'm not going to say it wasn't. People were just going into furniture stores and bicycle shops and pick and saves and running out with stuff saying, it's free.
Right.
They were looting. But there was, I mean, it
order
was just,
had completely broken down.
Absolutely. And so then it was a matter of, okay, once everything calmed down, how do we build back the city? How do we get back these items? We'd see kids riding around on bikes with tags still on them. We're like, you can't have that. And it was insane. It was crazy. But it
world
really
gone mad.
Yes. And it really started, and it divided the police department and the communities in which they serve, especially if they had an African-American community they served.
Okay.
Because there really, that division had taken place. And it really, that's when video cameras came into play, which we now embrace, and my officers openly want to wear, and we have on our cars. You know,
okay.
So you come full circle from, it's none of your business how I do my police work. You don't
right.
have a say, and a division between the police department and their communities to positive change, where body cameras or technology is used to have as a point of transparency, as a point of protecting the officers and the community, and we have community policing, where we embed it in the communities.
Okay, and so let's talk about some of, I guess, the changes in the way that policing was done. I think, and I may be going out on a limb here, but maybe say generation prior to you, it was really a blue-collar thing. If you were big and, you know, you could handle yourself and handle situations. And so it wasn't a very professional type of thing. There wasn't a whole lot of stuff that you had to know. There wasn't a lot of schooling or that kind of stuff. And now, if I am correct, now it's a much more professional thing because there's different departments and there's all kinds of different aspects to it, and the community, I mean, the society is more complex now.
Yeah, and the expectations and the focus on police work is at the forefront. Yeah, absolutely. We've evolved completely. I mean, before, there were age requirements, there were age restrictions, and there were height restrictions.
Right.
And women could not work a police car. So okay. We have evolved forward where there are no age. As long as you can pass the police academy and you have a high school diploma and a driver's license and you don't have a criminal background,
right.
You can be a cop.
Okay.
So but you still can do. Those can be still the basic requirements. It doesn't matter if you're male, female, how tall or big you are, anything like that. It doesn't matter what age you are. When I was a tax staff, we had a 45-year-old female come through, and she was kicking the butts of guys that were 20 years old out there. So more power to her, and she's still working a police car.
Okay.
And she's a grandma.
So,
wow. You know, that's what's really cool about the job.
Mm-hmm.
But I say you move forward now to modern day, and I will tell you the majority of officers coming in have a degree,
right.
If not an AA, a BA, or a master's. And so, yes, the education component has really come full force in the law enforcement profession to raise the elevation of who we are as professionals. Absolutely. The critical thinking, the thinking outside the box.
And the types of situations that you guys would be faced with, I think, has many more dimensions than it had, say, back in the 50s.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you still can be, though, basics. You can be a 21-year-old male or female with a high school diploma and a driver's license with no criminal background and be a police officer.
All right.
So
you too.
So we have a blend. I have a blend of officers that are almost 60 driving around the streets, and I have a blend of officers who are 22.
So it's not like the locker room of a football team anymore.
No, not at all. And I think the men and women value each other. They blend. You know, we've gotten past that. This is an all-boys club, you know, and the women are trying to break the glass ceiling.
Right.
I think the ceiling's been cracked and broken. It's just a matter of level the playing field and having more women on there.
And probably not just in terms of a glass ceiling. I think they probably have come to legitimately respect your contribution as opposed to, oh, they're asking us to water this down and it's going to be a mess.
That's correct. No, absolutely. And when I worked patrol, it was if it's a rape, then the female officer does it, you know, that kind of thing. It was like they just deferred to us, and it's not like that anymore. You know, everybody does everything, and we are all generalists and expected to do everything. So I think we're in a good space, and we can only just move forward from there.
Okay.
But we have come full circle and beyond.
So you are at a certain point in your career, and there's an opportunity to be a police chief. Did you apply for other chief positions prior to Laguna Beach, or was this, you know, you're just like one shot and swish?
No, I did. The only other police chief position I applied for was for Long Beach when I was there. And my colleague, Robert Luna, got the position. And and I was 50 at the time, and I had also applied to Laguna at the same time.
Oh, okay.
I had done both.
So right about the same time.
At the same time. And I wanted Laguna more than Long Beach. I had always thought about coming here, always wanted the job. 10 years, it was about 10 years prior, I don't know how many years prior, when Chief Paul Workman was appointed chief here. I was waiting to see if it was going to open for the outside because I was going to put in for it then.
Oh, okay.
And you also have to realize, too, Long Beach is a great training ground for a chief position.
Mm-hmm.
I am one of 20 of their command staff that have left to be chiefs outside of Long Beach, which shows what a great training ground that Long Beach PD is. So, following my colleagues, it was fun to watch them become the chief of Newport and the chief of Oceanside and the chief like Folsom and Modesto and Santa Monica now. And,
wow.
And
wow.
Yeah, so we've taken the coastline pretty much, and Carlsbad as well. So Laguna Beach opened. I was really excited because I thought, what a great way to end my last 5 years in a city I love, in the county I love. My family comes here, has always been coming here, and I hit the jackpot. I got really lucky.
Okay. And so what is it like?
It's awesome. It's awesome to come to Laguna Beach where, yes, we're a small city, but we're not. The biggest challenge is we have 24,000 residents but 6 million visitors a year,
right,
and balancing the needs of both of those communities.
Sure.
And not only is the 6 million visitors, they're worldwide. They're just not localized visitors.
Right, yes.
So balancing that and understanding the needs and the impacts of that, and then you pile on social media and how we're no longer the little secret niches of Laguna Beach beaches.
Well, yeah, I guess, yeah, that us and the people who live by the Hollywood sign, right?
That's correct. That's correct. Alta Laguna, and these are no longer little sacred Laguna Beach secrets.
Right.
They are worldwide secrets, and so everybody's coming down to enjoy them and use them.
Everybody.
And so people, you know, the community is like we're being overused, and we never have a downtime anymore. And,
right.
And that is very different than when you're looking at just a completely different community over in Long Beach. It's just very diversified and different. And the arts community here, how it's embedded in everything that we do, which is, I think, wonderful.
Okay.
And we're smaller, and the cops do everything. So where if you're in, you know, you're in LAPD or you're in Long Beach where it's very large,
oh,
if you have a specific crime, you call in the experts to handle that crime.
Right, right.
Not that we don't bring in our detectives to help with handling larger crime scenes or scenarios.
Sure.
But your beat cop is swabbing DNA and doing prints and taking photographs and doing all those things in an outside agency. You call in an outside entity to do that for you. So I think that's really neat.
All right. Okay, we're going to take another quick break, and then when we come back, we'll have more from Laura Farinella of the Laguna Beach Police Department. And this is KX93.5, and you're listening to The Importance of Being Show. Be right back.
You opened up your door, couldn't believe my luck. You in your new blue dress, taking away my breath. A cradle is soft and warm, I couldn't do me no harm. Showing me how to give into temptation, knowing full well the earth will rebel. Into temptation, muddled of nervous words. never amount to betrayal. Sentence is all my own, and the price is to watch it fail. As I turn to go, you looked at me for half a second with an open invitation for me to go into temptation, knowing full well the earth will rebel. Into temptation, safe in the wide open arms of hell. We can go sailing in, climb down, lose yourself when you linger long. Into temptation, right where you belong. Guilty get no sleep in the last slow hours of morning. Experience is cheap. I should listen to the warning. But the cradle is soft and warm. Temptation, knowing full well the earth will rebel. Into your wide open arms, no way to break this spell. Break this spell.
Okay, this is KX93.5. You are listening to the Importance of Being show. I'm your host, Ernest Hackman. We do this show live every Saturday morning from 9 to 10. And today I have as my guest Laguna Beach Police Chief Laura Farinella. And we've had a lovely conversation. And so we are now at the point where you are chief. And what's it like? What's your philosophy of being a chief? What are you trying to accomplish?
Well, what I'm trying to accomplish is make the police department go from good to great.
Okay.
And to make sure we're servicing the needs of the community as most efficiently and effectively as we can, leveraging both the best quality employees that are well-trained, as well as the best equipment to do that as well. So being here in Laguna, when I got here, I never wanted to make any assumptions about the police department and the community or anything like that. So I sat down with each and every employee.
Remake it in your image.
So I wanted to know, what do you always have in place? What do we already do well?
Okay.
Do we need to get better at?
So you didn't want to lose anything you already had.
Correct. And so I sat down with each and every employee. I really dug into all the data of how fast we get there, why we go to certain locations, why we deploy the way we do. Everything that you can think of. And I've been here 3 years now. And so in those 3 years, through a strategic plan I put together, I think that we've made some great moves and efforts towards community policing and interacting with our community, because police work, even though social media is huge and we're on every social media platform that you can think of, police business is still a face-to-face business with the community. So even though we're creative on the social media side, we need to find unique and different ways to interact with the community face-to-face.
Okay.
So we're doing that.
So you're not just a Twitter account.
That is correct. And people can put a face to the name, and they just have that experience. A lot of times, the one and only time you ever encounter a police officer is not in a good scenario. As a customer. You either called us there on a bad day, or it's a traffic stop, or we're stopping you from doing something maybe you want to be doing. So having that dialogue and seeing that we're people too, I think in generating the space to do that breaks down those walls. And the next time something happens, maybe a consideration is given for us and a better understanding of why we did what we did. And on the reverse side, the same thing for the officers, for the community. The community are not trained victims. They're not, they don't understand why we do certain things the way we do them.
Sure, sure.
And so understanding that on our side of the fence too, is that when we roll up, we do things a certain way, the way we talk to them, the questions we ask, how we approach a problem, and the decisions we make, they might think that it's inappropriate or wrong or it's abrasive or whatever.
Right.
But a lot of times we have to do these things to get the information we need to solve the problem.
Yep.
And for officer safety purposes. So I think creating those spaces through Coffee with a Cop, through the Citizens Academy, Leadership Laguna, and everything else that we do, working with the schools and a dog walker watch, we go to realtor watch. We're trying every facet we can to have that face-to-face interaction.
Dog walker watch?
Yes. So we realize that we can't be every place at one time.
Oh,
and
okay.
So Natasha Hernandez, one of our community services officer, she came up with the Dog Walker Watch program, in which that we go out to maybe the dog park or Alta Laguna, and we talk to the people walking their dogs, because they generally walk their dogs early in the morning and later in the night. Mm-hmm. And again, we need the community to help us be our eyes and ears. And so talking with our those dog watchers, if you see something out of place or something that seems wrong in your community, give us a call. Empower them to pick up the phone, even if they think it might be nothing. It could be something.
Hmm.
And I think that that's been working out really, really well.
Well, good, good. Well, it's I feel like we're really lucky to have you.
Well, thank you.
And I am glad that you took the time to come and talk to us today. And thanks again.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right. This is KX93.5, and you've been listening to the Importance of Being show. Coming up next is Steve Reed and his music show, and I'll be back next week. This is KX93.5.
Hello, baby, hello. Haven't seen your face for a while. Have you quit doing time for me? Or are you still the same spoiled child? Hello, I said hello. Is this the only place you thought to go? Am I the only man you ever had? Or am
am I just the last surviving friend that is? Let you feel not lucky knowing me, keeping the speed. Set my own. Harmony and me, we're pretty good company. Looking for.